Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on trade secrets when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep 41% of what you create and produce. The government gets the other 59%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? But if you think your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year. And you're going to net 24% and the government gets 76%. Which means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more dollars. That's 8% more take-home pay than you did this year. You get that? You work twice as hard and you get 8% of it. Now, there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners, and then only net 24% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package, and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is we pay so much and receive so little. Let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct and order yours today. It's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about trade secrets. Now, there's another outfit that's got some trade secrets. It's the pharmaceutical industry. And here today in the studio, I have Tom Collins, a druggist, who's going to tell us a little bit about the drug business. Welcome, Tom.
Well, thanks for having me, George.
Listen, Tom, you've been a student here at the school now for a number of years, and I've mentioned you from time to time on the air. I never mentioned you by name. And Tom Collins isn't his real name, but we don't want to spill the beans and get the pharmaceutical people after you and take your license away from you or something like that. But I have told the listening audience, Tom, a number of times about some of the secrets that you've revealed to me, and I couldn't resist when you offered to come in today and help spill the beans and give us some more of those trade secrets of the pharmaceutical industry. Tell us a little about yourself, Tom. Give us something about your credentials, would you?
I'm not going to give the name of the pharmacy school so people can't track me down. But I went to a pharmacy school back east, right around New Jersey somewhere, and I've been a pharmacist since 1999. I've worked in various industries, parts of the pharmacy industry, hospital, home infusion, long-term care, and a little bit of retail. So I've done mostly every aspect of the pharmacy industry.
You know anything about nursing homes?
Unfortunately, when I first got into it, I started as a technician, 1992, and you get into some jobs and you kind of put on rose-colored glasses and think you're going to start helping these people. And as I started working, and as the years went on, I realized that most of these places are just places to shut away the senior citizens and to keep them out of the way of their families. And these are probably, I would say, that the senior citizens in the United States are the most drug addicted, drugged up people that I've ever seen. From painkillers, anti-anxiety drugs, anti-psychotic drugs, anti-depression drugs, and a lot of other medications. The physicians who normally go to these, I'd say about 80% of the facilities are either state-run or not. They don't get as much money as some of the more high-class private facilities. Physicians will come in there once a month, as required by law, to sign off on the medication charts. So what you'll find is the medications that they came in on when they got out of the hospital, the medications that they're on in the nursing facility tends to stay with them throughout their entire, through the rest of their life while they're at these nursing facilities. So the doctors will just sign off on the orders. They won't do any kind of drug utilization review, as they call it, and really pour through these charts to determine whether or not the medications are still appropriate or useful. You'll get pharmacists that will go in to review charts that they're consultant pharmacists, and they'll put in recommendations to the doctors. The recommendations that they put in for the doctors are, I think they're an average, about 25% of the time the doctors will take the recommendations, otherwise they don't want to hear it. So they'll have their private practice, and the easy money comes in working for the nursing homes. The nurse will call the doctor or page the doctor and say, Mrs. Smith is having problem X. Can we do this? And then the doctor says, sure. And then the nurse will write up the orders herself and himself, and it'll just put telephone order from Dr. Jones. So that's the way it works. The doctors don't really see the patients all that much. It's usually the nurses that are there handling the problems.
I read an article here not long ago that 6 prescription drugs is the average that the average senior citizen, 65 or older, 6 prescription drugs are on. Tell us a little bit about these prescription drugs and what you called the combination of these chemicals in these drugs, which equal poison.
Well, in the retail setting, the average prescription drug count is around 6. But in the nursing home setting, the number is much higher. It's usually, on average, 10 to 12 medications, I would say, just from what I've experienced. And you'll get all kinds of, they call them drug interactions, where you'll get two drugs that will interact with each other to produce either a theoretical or an actual threat to the health and safety of the patient. So you'll get an interaction, say, from a blood thinner and like an antidepressant. And then so those two drugs will interact, but there are also other drugs that interact with the other drugs that are interacting. So you can get combinations, if you have 12 drugs and you get interactions between 3 or 4 of the drugs, you can wave through the interaction and ask the nurse to monitor, the blood thinning agent or something like that. But there are so many other different combinations of these drugs that you can't really keep track of everything that they're on, and the interactions are a lot of them go unnoticed.
Do these drugs kill these people?
Sure. Sure they do.
You know, we've done some articles here from time to time. Back in Clinton's day, he went to Congress and he said, we got a national problem here. We're killing 130,000 people every year with bad drugs. Too many drugs, not enough drugs, the wrong prescription drugs, etc. And I suspect that number of 130,000 is probably understated. Other authorities think it's as high as 1 million. If you cut that in half, you'd have 500,000. If you cut that in half, you'd have 250,000, which is about double this 130. These drugs over here, tell us a little bit about this interaction as it relates to new symptoms, which causes a need for new drugs to treat the symptoms of the drug interactions.
Well, one of my favorite drugs is, it's an antiarrhythmic. It's called cordrone. the brand name is called Cordurone. And one of the big symptoms of the, or one of the big side effects of the drug is, it's an antiarrhythmic agent. In other words, it's used in, if you have a heart condition. Well, one of the side effects of the drug is heart arrhythmias. So, it's the drug's being used to treat arrhythmias, and one of the problems that it can cause is irregular heartbeat, which is what you're trying to treat. And so, then the person will go into cardiac arrest, and they may die. And then what you'll get is, okay, so you have this side effect that takes place from this drug, from this antiarrhythmic drug, and the person goes into cardiac arrest and dies. Most of these people are so old that they'll have orders on their chart. It'll say DNR/DNI. DNR means do not resuscitate. DNI means do not intubate. Meaning if this person, which basically in layman's terms means if this person goes into cardiac arrest and dies, don't do anything to save them. So they're so old or they're so infirm that when they die, they'll just say, well, you know, it was their time to go. But you never see the kind of investigation that will go into, well, why the person died. Did they die from the failure of the drug, Cordurone? And I remember when I was in pharmacy school, we were talking, one of our classes was on antiarrhythmic agents. And it was always a theoretical. Well, the theory is that if we slow down the heart's rhythm, they'll save the person from dying. And it came out that when we were in pharmacy school, we were talking about this, and it came out around the same time that another drug was on the market, and I can't remember the name of the drug, but it was caused a big scandal because more people died when they were on the drug than if you had the same condition did not take anything at all. So I think it was like, I don't know, 50 or 60,000 people died. But it was always this, it was a theory. And it was never tested. And then but the problem is you still have a bunch of people on this drug. Always on this drug, Cordurone. You have an arrhythmia problem? No problem. We'll put them on Cordurone. It's a good drug. Once a day? Yeah, it causes some side effects. But the doctors would always say, well, it's a benefit risk analysis. We have to weigh the benefits versus the risks. One of the side effects of the drug, it's a funky side effect. It causes the eye, the white of your eye, to turn blue, like a hue of blue. Actually, the drug is poorly disposed of by the body. It has what's termed a long half-life, meaning the amount of time it takes for your body to dispose of half the drug takes much longer than, say another drug. I think it takes like 3 or 4 days for your body to get eliminated half the drug. Well, what happens is the drug crystallizes and it forms deposits, and where it deposits the crystals is in the eye. So I've never seen it, but it can cause these crystal deposits in the eye. And I thought about that, and I of course, you know, I asked my pharmacy school teacher about this side effect, and they said, well, it's a benefit risk analysis. So the side effects, the interactions, and the potential of death are all weighed as a benefit-risk analysis. It's like having these folks in the nursing homes. You have these steroids. Classic one is prednisone. Steroids cause all kinds of problems. I'm sure most people are aware of the problems it causes. It can cause liver failure, heart failure, kidney failure. You can get all kinds of problems from steroids. Well, people in nursing homes have arthritis. They have all these different kinds of problems. Some of them are on, you know, 15, 20, 30 milligrams a day, maybe higher than that. And it was another question I asked in pharmacy school. I said, well, if there are so many problems with steroids, why would you keep someone in a nursing home on these drugs? And they said, well, if Mrs. Jones feels comfortable after taking the steroid, if their joint pain goes away and they're 80 years old and they don't have much time left, what does it matter if it's going to cause these extra side effects? We want to make her comfortable.
So if it gives her heart arrhythmia, and she dies, that's acceptable.
That's exactly right.
Because it makes her feel good.
That's right.
Wouldn't she feel just as good if she was taking some other kind of drug, such as heroin or cocaine or marijuana? Or
Well, those are illegal drugs, and we're not allowed to give illegal drugs in nursing homes. You have to give prescription drugs. So if you want to give heroin in a nursing home, it has to be prescribed in the form of morphine or oxycodone or hydrocodone or codeine or some legal form of the drug.
In other words, you can get heroin, cocaine, and marijuana in the drugstore.
Yes.
But you can't buy heroin, you have to buy morphine.
No, that's correct. Yeah. Heroin is the illegal drug. It's a little less strong than morphine, but they're both basically, they do the same exact thing. They kill pain. The legal form of cocaine, believe it or not, is called cocaine. There are actually different forms of cocaine. And cocaine is used in the hospital. Most people don't know this. It's produced by a company called Roxane Pharmaceuticals, and they produce it in a liquid form. If you were to get nasal surgery, and after the surgery you were experiencing bleeding, you would apply cocaine, liquid cocaine, using a Q-tip, and swab the area. It provides local constriction of the blood vessels to stop the bleeding. You could use that postoperatively for nasal surgery. But the more widely used form of cocaine would be something like Ritalin. Kids today in school, Ritalin is sold. Kids on Ritalin will sell their Ritalin tablets to others, and they'll crush them up and snort them. And it provides the same euphoria and central nervous stimulation that cocaine does.
So Ritalin then is just the legal form of cocaine.
Sure.
And we can go in and buy Ritalin over the counter from you with a prescription.
With a prescription, that's right.
Let's talk a little about the pricing. You notice that the government has this war on drugs, and they're spending billions of dollars a year trying to eradicate these drugs. And it seems like to me that illegal drugs on the street are cheaper than drugs in the drugstore.
Yeah, they are. They are.
What's the price of cocaine, marijuana, and heroin? Excuse me, I guess you don't use heroin. You use morphine.
Yes.
Let's get a little feel for this. What's the price of marijuana out on the street? Got any idea?
Okay, I have a buddy. We'll call him Jim, because I don't want to give away his identity either. I've known him for many years, and he's sold pot illegally for many years. I called him, the last time I talked to him, I asked him about the going price of marijuana. He'll buy several ounces of the stuff, and he just sells it to his friends, and then he makes little money so he can smoke his own. So he'll sell an ounce. Well, actually, he would prefer to sell it in quarter ounces. He said the quarter ounces will go for between, depending on the quality and depending on how much his supplier charges, between $100 and $120 for a quarter of an ounce.
Well, that'd be about $480 an ounce. Now, what does that same marijuana cost when we buy it down at Osco, Betry, or Rexall?
There's a brand name product called Marinol. It's produced by Roxane Pharmaceuticals. Comes in 2.5, 5, and 10 milligram capsules. 5 milligrams twice a day would be the dose, the average dose. And that price, the last time I checked, was about, for a 1 month supply, which would be the same as about a quarter of an ounce if you were to smoke it, goes for about $400 for a 1 month supply. So about 60 pills would cost you about $400.
So a month's supply of marijuana at Rexall is $400, and a month's supply of marijuana from Jim, the dealer on the street corner, is about $100. So the competitive edge of the illegal drug salesman on the corner is about 4-1.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Does it run the same for cocaine and heroin?
I would say I don't know anybody that sells or uses that stuff, but I'll tell you what. You know, morphine, there are several different formulations of morphine, and if you were to take something like an OxyContin, which a few years back was really big, kids were getting hold of OxyContin illegally, it's an extended release capsule. They crush it in their teeth and they get this big rush like heroin. That was going for the prescription drug. That would go for about $300 or $400 a month for the prescription stuff. And, that's the more commonly prescribed. And even the extended release morphine, the morphine tablets can go for around the same amount of money. So I would say, yeah, I'd say there's about the same amount. I don't know how much heroin or cocaine costs, but I think it's about the same amount.
So we got a drug problem out here on the street because these illegal drug dealers are competing with you.
Yes.
And so you and the pharmaceutical industry are kind of up in arms, and
That's right.
To the government and you say, government, we got to stamp out these illegal drugs because these people can buy these illegal drugs for a fourth of what they buy them for in the drugstore, and if they do that, it cuts into our business.
When I was working in long-term care, we had a we called the narcotics cage, where we had a large room filled with everything that you can imagine, all these controlled drugs. And from 7 o'clock in the morning when we opened up till 9 o'clock at night when we closed, that room was always humming with business. We were always dispensing Percocets, OxyContin. There's a pain patch called Dorjezic, dispensing that. Injectable morphine, oral morphine, all kinds of formulations, Ritalin, Adderall, you name it. I would say the number of controlled drugs in the long-term care setting, we had about, I think it was about 60 facilities. We were dispensing at least, I'd say about 200 controlled drugs every day. So yes, there is definitely a drug problem.
How hard is it for me to get these drugs? Let's suppose that I decided that I wanted to become a drug user, and I want to go to my doctor, and I want to get drugs. What did people commonly do to get these drugs?
The easiest one to get would be the painkillers, and I experienced that working at a facility. It was a public health clinic on an Indian reservation. It's hard to say that you're not in pain because you have back pain. And so it's hard to prove. So these folks up there, they all have back pain. So they're all getting some kind of controlled substance, some kind of painkiller that's going to cause the kind of euphoria or a similar euphoria that you would get from heroin. So you would say, I've got a lot of back pain. And especially, it'll work even better if you have a history of, say, something like a herniated disc, like what everybody has, or you were lifting a box, and you're in a lot of pain. So if you can fake pain, you can get a prescription. You can get a prescription for that.
So I go to the doctor, I get my prescription, I take it into you, you fill the prescription, and now I've got my legal drugs.
That's right.
It costs me four times as much, but
yes,
I've got what I want.
Right, right.
Is that what Rush Limbaugh was doing?
I would say, I don't know exactly what he was doing, but I can only imagine that it was something similar to that. The guy said he had a history of back pain, and he was getting OxyContin, and he was getting hundreds and hundreds of pills. Plus the fact that he's a pretty popular guy, and he might be paying a pretty penny for this doctor. And you can get your prescriptions. He probably got his prescriptions that way. There were some scandals that were going around a few years back, right up in the East Coast area where I was from. These doctors were made a small little business of selling OxyContin prescriptions, and it's hard to prove. The DEA comes in; it's really hard to prove that the person that doesn't have the pain. They're actually a pharmacy caught on to what was going on. These two physicians were arrested and put in jail, but it was. They were giving these high doses of OxyContin to these kids, 18 years old, and when he brought the prescription into the pharmacist sized up the kid and says, why do you need this? And he called the doctor, and he says, does this kid have this kind of pain? The doctor says, well, if you won't fill it, I'll find another pharmacy to fill it. And then he dimed them out to the DEA. But that's just one pharmacy and two doctors. And if it went on in a metropolitan area up in the Northeast, I think it goes on all over the place all the time.
So not only do we have an illegal drug problem here on the streets, but we also have the doctors that are selling the drugs. For instance, if I went into a doctor and I just said, hey, listen, I get this pain and I want this OxyContin over here and I'm willing to pay you $100 to write me the prescription or $200 or whatever it is. You're telling me then that there are a lot of doctors out there that would write that prescription for the money.
Yeah, just don't write them a check. Just do cash. Just do cash under the table, and I think you're in. I think you're in good shape.
Because Rush Limbaugh was alleged, anyway, what I read in the papers, was going around to different doctors, and evidently this is illegal. I haven't looked into the legalities of it, but evidently it's illegal to go to two or three doctors at the same time.
Yeah. Doctor shopping is what they call it.
Doctor shopping. Yeah. And he was getting this prescription from one doctor, and then you go to another doctor and get the prescription, go to a third doctor, and so on. And but that's pretty common. It goes on all the time. Is that what you're telling?
Yeah, it's I worked for a very short stay in a retail pharmacy, and there was this one guy, I won't give his name, but he was notorious for writing a controlled substance, narcotics. I would get these prescriptions all the time from these people who would come in hobbling in, always in pain. And he would always write for the highest strength of this particular drug. So one day I was in the pharmacy doing my work, get a call from an insurance company. And he says, tell me about Dr. Such and Such. And I said, oh, you want to hear about Dr. Such and Such? I said, well, out here, he's known as the Candy Man. And I'd heard that from the other pharmacists. They said, you got to watch this guy because he prescribes a lot of controlled substances. So the insurance company says, oh, really? And I said, yes, really. So what they did was, there was one particular prescription that they were questioning, because this woman had gotten a lot of it over the course of 2 or 3 months or something like that. And they flagged it, and they called the doctor himself, and they said, you know, look, we're catching wind what's going on here. And they put her on another medication for the pain that she says that she's in. So a lot of that went on out, at least at the retail pharmacy that I went in.
These drugs are poison, aren't they?
Yeah, that was the first question in pharmacy school. The dean of pharmacy, the dean of students came in. That was kind of funny. And he says, first question, first day, and he says, what is a drug? And I actually answered the question. And I raised my hand and said, drugs are poison. He says, that's right. And he starts telling us that all these drugs that we are dispensing are poisons in high enough doses. And there are a lot of these drugs that you take for, say, heart arrhythmias or high blood pressure. Because of how slowly your body can eliminate these drugs, if you take a little bit too high of a dose, your body can go toxic, and you can die. You can die from taking these drugs if you take too much of them.
Vioxx is a killer.
Yes,
this is just one of probably 10 or 12 drugs over the last 6 or 8 years that have been taken off the market.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're all approved by the FDA. And, the buying public out here, we have confidence in the Food and Drug Administration and government, and we have confidence in the Mayo Clinic and hospitals and pharmacists and pharmacies. You know, it's part and parcel of American society. But we find more and more of these drugs that are actually killers. Tell us a little about that, would you?
When they were approving that, that Vioxx story is kind of funny. I was in pharmacy school when they were coming out with this drug. Well, it was actually three different drugs. It was Vioxx, Celebrex, and Bextra. Oh, these pharmacy school teachers, they were saying how great this drug is. They said, these COX-2 inhibitors, This is the best thing. This is the best thing to come along with the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. They said, unlike ibuprofen, you'll have a drug that you only take once a day. It doesn't have the interactions that ibuprofen has. It doesn't have the stomach upset. This is great. I mean, I'm hearing this in pharmacy school. They're saying how great these COX-2 inhibitors are. It's on our tests and everything. And then the studies start coming out later, and then they say, then it was like, I guess around, let's see, Vioxx came out in 99. A year after Vioxx came out, they said, well, the stomach upset's still there with the COX-2s, but once a day dosing, no problem. The interactions, there's no problem. And then they started coming out with the other studies, with the long-term studies, which were saying, well, there is the same side effect profile that you get from ibuprofen, but it's a more dangerous drug. So the older drug, which cost pennies for, you know, 20 or 30 of them or whatever, as opposed to a drug like Vioxx, which cost, Vioxx is costing like 60 or 70 bucks a month. Same thing with Celebrex, is more dangerous than the old ibuprofen drugs. And then they're testing these, and when they're testing these drugs, you know, they're not testing it on a Mrs. Rosenkluffel, who's 70 years old, who has the knee pain, who has the arthritis, who has the heart condition, who has all of these other issues. They're testing them on 1,000 healthy volunteers between the ages of, I think it's 18 to 40, and all males, I believe. I think it's all males, all healthy volunteers. And then they say, yep, the drug's safe and effective. So they're not even testing it on the population that they need to. They're testing it in healthy volunteers. And then later on, after the drug trials are over, well, you think they're over, because there are four phases to the drug trial, and the last phase is when you get the prescription and you're taking the Vioxx for 1, 2, 3, 5 years. And then when you go to your doctor or you die, and then it's reported that you died because of a heart arrhythmia or something like that, or heart attack, they're supposed to report that information to the FDA. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. It depends on how high publicity of a case it becomes. If there's a long, if the trend starts going towards, oh, geez, all these people are on Vioxx, well, we're going to report it to the FDA, and we're going to raise a big stink over it. But if you're getting isolated incidents over this, nobody's just flies right under the radar. And that's why when I say, you asked me earlier, do these drugs kill these people in these nursing homes? And I said, yes. You're going to say, well, do you have proof of that? No. But I'll bet you that it does. I'll bet it does.
If this drug Vioxx, and there was one here, I forgot the name of it. You mentioned 50,000. There was a book, and I reported on this book back in the 1980s. It killed 50,000 people that they know of. That's what they admitted.
It's called Tambacor. The generic name.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it was Tambacor. Now, that's what they admitted to.
Right.
But it probably killed 200,000 or 300,000, because if I've got this straight, when somebody dies, they take a look at the body. They might even do an autopsy on it and say, well, this guy had a heart attack. Look at his heart. It's blown out. Do they then go back and say, gee, well, this guy was on Vioxx, so therefore there's a connecting link between this guy's heart attack and Vioxx? Or does the death certificate simply say, well, he died of a heart attack, and it's irrelevant as to what drugs he was on?
That's right, because you have the pre-existing condition, and they're saying, well, you're using the drug for this particular ailment, so, well, of course he died of a heart attack, because his heart was weak. And the Vioxx, it really does depend on how many people, if the link is, see, they have to make the link. If the link isn't made, then nobody ever puts two and two together. Well, Mrs. Smith was on Norvasc, and she died of a heart attack. Well, Norvasc is for high blood pressure. Geez, it must have exacerbated, you know, she must have had exacerbation of her heart condition, and she died of a heart attack. You know, a lot of these blood pressure drugs, when you're on these blood pressure drugs, there are warnings that say, don't abruptly stop taking it, because what'll happen is your heart will try to compensate, and it'll start beating faster, and then you can blow your heart out. So that can happen sometimes too. Has it happened? Probably. Can you prove it? I guess if you looked into it long and hard, you probably could. But I don't think anybody wants to go through the time to say, to come to a determination that a 95-year-old woman died of a heart attack because of the drug, or because she was 95 years old.
If you've got somebody in a nursing home who's 95 years old and she's on 12 drugs, and she dies, nobody is going to put together the story or history that shows which one of those drugs or the nurse that gave her an overdose of a particular drug.
DNR, DNI. Do not resuscitate, do not intubate most of the time. No questions, no muss, no fuss.
There's been a couple of cases, kind of wild cases, where a nurse, serial killer nurses, have killed 10, 15, 20 people before they get caught or before somebody catches up to them. And they almost invariably use some kind of a drug.
Yeah.
And they don't get caught because who's going to do an autopsy on an 80-year-old woman or a man that died in a nursing home who's already on 12 drugs?
Yeah, I mean, they'll use a drug, say something like adrenaline, where you'll have high amounts of adrenaline in your body. If you precipitate a heart attack with adrenaline, then they come in to try to resuscitate the person who's having a heart attack. What are you going to use? Well, you use adrenaline. So now you have an overabundance of adrenaline in the body, which is produced naturally anyway. And then there's the fingerprints aren't really there. So yeah, you have that. They'll use something that doesn't have as high of a signature. And then there's the other aspect. That's exactly right. Will anybody really care that an old woman who was who's on her way out died from a drug overdose? Probably not.
She died at age 80. If she hadn't been taking these drugs, she might have lived to be 90.
Right.
But then that's subjective. Who knows how long she's going to live? And if some guy's running around killing all of these people, nobody's going to check up on it. And that's why these serial killers get away with it. Drugs then seem to be the perfect poison, don't they?
That's right. That's right. A lot of them are untraceable. And a lot of them are, they may just give too much of the same drug that the person is on.
Untraceable. I'm going to take a minute here. I've got a mid-course correction here to make. We're at the halfway point in the program. We'll be back with Tom Collins and more on trade secrets when we return. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website also. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may or may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, tonight we're talking about trade secrets, facts that you're not supposed to know. And my guest tonight is Tom Collins, a druggist. And Tom has been in the drug business. I shouldn't say drug business. I guess you're a pharmacist. You've been a pharmacist for how long?
About seven years.
7 years. So you went to... how long did you spend in school, Tom?
When I was there, it was 5 years. It was a five-year program. They've just upped it to 6 years.
Okay, so you spent 5 years in pharmacy school and now 7 years out on the street.
That's right.
Oh, excuse me. Not on the street. You're in the drug store.
That's right. That's right.
You're the legal drug dispenser over here. And tell us a little about this ADD problem over here. People come in, they want to buy Ritalin for their children. What do you know about Ritalin?
God. Before I get into that, it's kind of a funny story. When I was in, it wasn't funny. I mean, look back on now, it was funny. I was in a retail pharmacy, and this woman came in and she says, I need my son's prescription refilled. He's out of his, I think it was Adderall or something like that. So I'm putting the prescription through, and she's got her little son with him. I think he was like 5 or 6 at the time. And I'm trying to put the prescription through, and it takes a little bit of time. And she's standing there, and the kid's kind of fidgeting and going all over the place. And she says, oh, will you please hurry? Please, please hurry. He's really, really needs his Adderall. And I'm, you know, trying to fill it. I said, okay, you know, it'll only be a few minutes. And then she says to me, would you mind if I had, did the prescription go through? And I said, well, yeah, it went through. I'd set the count. She says, would you mind if I have one right now for him so that he calms down? And it was right then and there that I realized I felt bad for the child. And I said, you know, this woman, she doesn't realize it, but she has a child addicted to a prescription drug. And he was only like 5 or 6 years old. So the drugs, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, Ritalin really wasn't heard of. But the problem is it's just overly prescribed and completely out of control. I mean, I didn't need it back when I was growing up. I grew up in the 80s. So, and I was a hyper kid, and I think that it's just an overused. It's like with all these drugs on the market. They're available. That's the bottom line, is they're available.
And they're pushed, aren't they?
And they're pushed. The parent will go into the doctor. It's not a matter anymore of you bringing the child into the doctor and saying, what's wrong with my child? And here, let's see if we can work this out. The woman will go into the doctor's office and she'll say, I need Ritalin for my kid because he's jumping up and down on the sofa and he's getting reprimanded in school all the time. That's the way it works these days.
So it's the parents that come in, they want Ritalin, so they go to a drug dealer, and the doctor is the drug dealer that they know of because they're available in the Yellow Pages. As opposed, I mean, she could go down on the street and buy the same stuff called cocaine.
Probably would have the same effect too.
For 25% of the price.
Right, right.
I mean, if you want to put your kid on drugs, if you want to addict your kid to cocaine or crack or something, you could do it for a fourth the price by just buying it on the street.
I grew up, about half an hour from a major metropolitan area, and I'm sure that if you jumped in your car and went to that city, you would be able to find cocaine within an hour.
We were talking about this thing of, you know, traceability of these drugs. I want to go back to that. There's been so many murders committed, some high-profile crimes, and here at the law school we delve into these kinds of crimes, and I've got books and books here on the wall. And I'm kind of curious to know, typically when we're watching a TV show and somebody uses a drug to kill somebody, they always get caught. You're a druggist. What's the chances of getting caught using, for instance, this drug that you were talking about here?
Adrenaline?
Adrenaline.
It's very, very, very low. You would have to... because adrenaline is a naturally occurring substance in the body, if you go into cardiac arrest, if you're having a heart attack, the first thing that your body does will produce adrenaline to try to get that heart beating again. It produces that excitatory response. Adrenaline's an emergency drug, and it's an emergency response in your body. So for you to have a high amount of adrenaline in your body when you die of a heart attack is normal. It's normal. You can use insulin. Insulin can overdose. Let me just preface this by saying I'm not advocating anybody use this, but these are, you could if you wanted to, insulin. If you precipitated hypoglycemia or low blood sugar, you'll die from that. You'll pass out and die. And then they'll say, geez, the person probably didn't eat, or the person for some reason had low blood sugar. And they'll die, and they'll just say, you know, died from hypoglycemia or something like that.
So the very prescription drugs that people have in the medicine cabinet are the exact poisons that somebody that wants to do them in could use to kill them, and nobody'd be the wiser.
That's right.
How often do you think that's done?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's not one of those. It's one of those things that flies under the radar, and like you had that kid that just died. That woman, Anna Nicole Smith, she's that model. Her son died in the
Kid's 18 years old.
Yeah.
Obviously, this kid, if he hadn't been on drugs of some kind, he wouldn't have died. 18-year-old kids don't die.
Yeah. He was on methadone, and he was taking two antidepressant drugs, and he died of an interaction between the two drugs. And methadone's used for people who are withdrawing from heroin. And the mother says, well, she cried. She pled ignorance and said, I didn't know that he was on these drugs, which is a crock. But if someone wanted to kill him, if someone wanted to murder him, what better drugs to use than the one he's already on? Because he's going to be taking the methadone for recreational use, and if someone was wise enough to understand the interaction between them, just give him extra doses of Prozac or Lexapro. I think those are the two drugs he was on. Actually, just thinking about it, why he was on two drugs that do the same exact thing. Lexapro and Prozac are both antidepressants. And every time I see something like that, I always question that and see if I can get to say, you know, you're duplicating the process. Why is the person on two of the same drugs? That was the first thing I thought of when I saw that. I said, why is this kid on these two drugs? So that's poorly managed depression, you know? Poorly managed depression, and if someone wanted to off him, they could have with those drugs.
That was the first thing that crossed my mind, was that an 18-year-old kid that's on drugs.
Yeah.
Did he make a mistake and take the wrong prescriptions at the wrong time? Just for funsies here, my uncle Carol died on his 30th birthday. It was a coincidence that it happened to be his birthday, but he was an alcoholic. And the doctor had prescribed some drug for him. I don't know what the drug was, but I do remember that my grandmother said that he was advised that he ought not to take this drug with alcohol.
Yep.
And that day he'd been drinking, and he took the drug, and he was walking down the street, and his heart failed.
Yep.
Now, the autopsy said he died from heart attack.
Yeah.
30 years old, died from heart attack. He actually didn't die from heart attack. He died from the interaction between the drug and the alcohol.
That's right.
And I've always remembered that, because it happened in our family, and it was a drug. Actually, I guess alcohol is a drug, so you get the interaction between these two drugs, which caused his heart to stop, and he just fell over dead on the street. The drug industry doesn't seem to take responsibility for these interactions of these drugs. And I don't see any on the advertisements when I watch the CBS Evening News. It's the drug advertisement program. There's about 10 ads during those programs, and they all have pharmaceuticals, you know, that they're trying to sell. They never tell us about these interactions that can kill us. And 130,000 people a year are dying from the interactions or the bad prescriptions that we're getting. What do you learn in pharmacy school, or what's the talk among all of you professionals concerning these 130,000 a year that are dying, which happens to be double the amount that died in the entire Vietnam War, and we do that every single year?
Well, that's the cost that you have to pay for good health. You have to have some people that die. I'm being facetious about that. But we, honestly, we can go back to pharmacy school. Not much was made of the amount of people that die in pharmacy school. We would learn, you have asthma, this is what you use to treat asthma, this is the test you need to perform. You have high blood pressure, this is what you need to do. you want to make a compound, this is what you need to do. I don't think that we ever spent one day talking about the amount of people that die from drug interactions and overdoses on drugs. What they do talk about is reducing the incidence of mistakes and reducing the amount of drugs that people are on to the minimum, that the minimum acceptable level, the lowest level that you can. They never talked about the mortality rate of all these people dying from these medications.
Tom, do you use any of the drugs that you prescribe?
Oh God, no. No.
Excuse me. You sound like Robert Mendelsohn. Mendelsohn's the guy that wrote that book. He said, How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician. He pointed out that 90% of pediatricians do not vaccinate their own children.
Right.
Now, as a druggist yourself, you mean to tell me you're making these drugs up and you're not prescribing them, but fulfilling these prescriptions and selling them across the counter, but you don't use them?
Yeah, it's because I know it's in that crap.
Because you know what's in that bottle, you wouldn't ingest that into your own
body. I know how to read those package inserts. You know, they give those commercials. They have those pharmaceutical ad commercials. I can go to a website, or I can go to a prescription bottle pulled off of the shelf, and you'll get a huge sheet of paper, and it shows how it acts within the body, what it does, what it's used for, and the side effects. And I know how to read that. If you're not trained. You don't know what you're looking at. You don't know what blood dyscrasias means, or some kind of scientific term. I was trying to think of something off the top of my head. Oh, pseudomembranous colitis, something that you would not know, not know what it means. When I read that stuff, then I know exactly what I'm looking at, and I say, geez, I don't think I want to contract. I don't think I want to go through pseudomembranous colitis. What that means is you have diarrhea so bad that the membrane from your intestinal tract comes out in your stool. That's what that means.
Oh my God. And so by using terms like that, lay people like myself and the people that the Joe Six Packs out there.
Yeah.
We don't know that drug is going to give us diarrhea to such a degree that the membranes of our guts will be coming out in our poops.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And so to keep that secret, that's a trade secret, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. That's a trade secret that only you pharmacists know.
Right.
And you give us full disclosure, don't you? It's in the paperwork in the box.
That's right. And we give you a package. We'll give you a we'll offer counseling. We'll talk to you. We'll even give you a piece of paper with the common side effects on it. And there's always our phone number on there. So we are always there for at your disposal if you have any questions regarding that.
So I could be at home dying of diarrhea, pick up the telephone and call you. And with your marvelous bedside manner, you will help me through my final.
This is what I'll say. I'll open up the package insert and I'll say, oh yeah, you're right. It does cause that. That is caused by the drug that you're taking. You should get down to the hospital right now.
Okay. So you pass me off to the hospital.
Oh yeah.
The guy goes down to the hospital and he says, oh my God, I've got my membranes of my intestines coming out in my stool. And then what do they do? What's their reaction?
They'll say, well, what kind of medications are you on? And you'll say it, and they'll say, it's, they may or may not know that it was caused by that drug. They'll research or look it up. They'll try to stop the problem. And if you die from that, because of that effect, well, that was a side effect that was given in the drug.
So that makes me the proximate cause of my own injury. I was warned, wasn't I?
That's right.
I was reading the Reader's Digest the other day, and I noticed that when I open the Reader's Digest, I'll turn to an ad, and it'll be a drug, and it could be Vioxx or whatever this drug is, and then it's got this great big print, and I can read it very easily. When I turn the page, I get fine print.
Yes.
Okay. And in that fine print, they tell you all the benefits of the drug and all of the side effects of the drug. And sometimes there's 15 or 20 of those side effects. And the words that they use are three, four, five-syllable words and terms that I've never heard and can't pronounce. And now, you went to pharmacy school. Did you go to pharmacy school to learn how to pronounce all of those words?
No. No, we didn't. We didn't go to pharmacy school to learn. We did learn how those words are pronounced, but we didn't go there just to learn those particular words. We learn what the drugs are, the drug classes, how they work, and we did not learn all the side effects. I mean, we couldn't learn all the side effects of those drugs. We just learned how to read where those side effects are. So I know that I go to pharmacy school. I don't know all the interactions. You know, we know more than the doctors. The doctors have one semester of pharmacology of their tenure in their time in medical school. They have one semester of pharmacology that teaches them how to prescribe. And then we have 2 years, two full years of pharmacology. And we learn all the drug classes. But no, we don't learn all that stuff in school.
So you don't have that committed to memory.
No.
But what you do is you look it up on the piece of paper after I call you and I say, well, here's my symptoms.
That's right.
And you gave me the number of the drugstore. And so I called up and said, oh, yeah, that's right. That does cause that symptom.
Yes.
Over there. So you then advise me to go to the hospital. That's kind of safe for you. It protects you from lawsuits. Is that what you're really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Protects us against any kind of liability. If we do everything that we were trained to do, fill the prescription, monitor or a scan for interactions, and fill it appropriately, make sure you're not allergic to anything like that, and you have to take it, and we tell you exactly how to take it. If you experience one of the side effects of the drug, we're okay.
All right, and the side effects of these drugs now are tested by the pharmaceutical companies. And then they put them in the package, and they tell us what the side effects are and whether it will or will not kill me, or might or might not kill me. And then if it does in fact kill me, or if I get sick and go to the hospital, then I'm the proximate cause of my own injury.
Well, you're actually giving them more credit than they deserve. They test a molecule. They don't know what it's going to do. They test it on rats and mice. They perform something called the LD99, lethal dose 99, meaning how much of this stuff is going to kill 99% of the mice that we give this to. And then they kill them, and they say, okay, 5 grams is enough to kill 99% of the mice. And they say, well, let's do the LD50. And then they back off the dose till they can kill 50% of the mice. And then they test it on the general population. As they get down from that, and then they find the side effects as they go through the drug trials.
So what we are guinea pigs out here on the final analysis, only this is the human trial.
That's right.
Okay. Well, Tom, I appreciate you coming in and telling us these trade secrets of the drug industry. If I get a little time here, I'm going to have you back again, and we'll see if we can talk more about trade secrets, the facts that you're not supposed to know.
Thanks, Mr. Gordon.
Well, we're just about out of time. Let me give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we're open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening. And good night, friends.